Welcome to Fusion, a podcast for Relay FM members where I talk to hosts from various shows about a single topic, although this month it's a lot of topics. We'll get to that. My name is Stephen Hackett, and this month I'm joined by a whole cast of characters. I have Flo from the Material Podcast, Jason from Upgrade and Liftoff, and Rosemary from Automators. And we're going to talk about some of the big trends we saw in tech in 2020. So a full house today. Let's go around and see how everybody's doing. Flo, how are you?
You know, I'm hanging in there.
Good. That's a victory this year.
Yes, 100%.
And Mr. Snell, how are you?
On a scale of 1 to 10, I'm a 7.
Hmm. Ooh.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, I took the 5, which is like the base, and then I added 1 because it's the holidays, and then I added 1 because my family and I are healthy, but I can't go above 7 in 2020. Sorry. It's a hard and fast rule.
And Rosemary, how about you?
I'm doing very well. All things considered, this year has been relatively kind to me, and I'm very fortunate, so I'm pretty happy.
So you're higher than Jason 7?
Possibly. I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily rate it on a number scale. I'd just rate it as I've just eaten a lot of chocolate, and I'm very happy.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
To be fair, it's 9 a.m. for some of you, and much later for others of you, so breakfast chocolate may be a strong move.
I would recommend it. It's made my December much happier.
So like I said, we want to talk about some of the big trends we saw this year in tech. A weird year in tech, right? A lot of the in-person stuff basically just went out the window, but still lots of products and services did make it on their way out the door to consumers. The thing that I wanted to start us off with was privacy. And I think we could lump in privacy both from what companies are doing and also what governments are talking about doing to these companies. And that varies from the EU to the US and around the world. But there's been a big focus on that this year. I think in particular, as more people are relying on technology to do jobs that maybe were once in person, the work from home movement, of course, really is massive this year. So Jason, let's start with you. What do you see as sort of the big story about privacy this year for 2020?
I don't know. This is a hard one. I didn't put this one on our list of topics, Stephen. So I don't know. Do I have to answer?
What you're saying is your take on this is too private to share with thousands of people.
I mean, I am reminded that given that everything we are doing is even more in the cloud this year than that, which is the biggest trend of the year, that once you do that, like, there's more that's trackable, and there's questions of, like, if you take your business into Slack or Microsoft Teams, is that, you know, it's less private and less secure than a whispered conversation in the break room or something, right? Like when I was in an office and we had a very, very bad office situation, one of my coworkers and I would go across the street to the little cafe that was in the park across the street from our office. And the walk there and back and waiting in line for our coffee or hot chocolate was our time to, like, talk about all the things that you can't talk about in the office about the office. And I was thinking about how, you know, we live in a world now where everybody is locked in their homes, or at least a lot of people are locked in their homes, and it's harder to do that. I think people aren't as well trained as some of us tech people are about their privacy and security on a personal level and on a work level. And then you get stories like Zoom not encrypting their things and shutting people down in the U.S. because of China and all those things. And I think that it just exposes that there are so many different surfaces from which we can lose our own privacy. And I don't know. I'm thinking of everything in 2020 as framed by suddenly all these things that happened in the real world now happen online. And what does that mean? And I think it goes for all of these topics.
What about you, Flo?
Yeah, I wanted to weigh in because I feel like in terms of privacy, we've been talking a lot on Material Podcast about just the overall distrust in big tech this year. That's really, it's been an interesting dichotomy, right? Because at one end, everybody's really come to rely on all these tech services because we're all working from home. And this whole like remote lifestyle it's been forced upon even those of us who were never had an infrastructure for it. We didn't even have like a desk in the house just to like sit our kid and let him do, you know, the Zoom in class. But then on the other end of the spectrum is the fact that there's been this increasing distrust in companies like Google and Facebook. And it's come to the point where the different governments are stepping in and saying, listen, this is not okay. I know the EU has kind of been the one that's been carrying the torch for that one, at least when it comes to antitrust. But there's a lot of rumbling about Google and just sort of, I think 2021, that's really going to come to, I feel like that's going to really climax and just sort of like, I think we're headed for a time where we're really thinking about all of these things that we're, this technical digital world that we live in and that this year has really forced us into.
Oh, Rose, you are in the great continent of Europe. now you're in the UK. You're not in the whatever sinking ship we're in. But you obviously spend a lot of time with us poor Americans. What is your viewpoint on that, of how the EU and other countries may be approaching this differently?
Well, I think the one thing that all politicians have in common is that they're not tech experts. So they tend to think, oh, yes, but we can easily, you know, we can easily make this good for us to do whatever thing that we deem necessary, usually building backdoors in, without thinking about the much, much wider implications of, hey, and now that means that, you know, all of these people who want to access this data but currently are unable to can also do that. So it's a very... You know, it's a problem that is global, and it is one of those things where, you know, it's good that the EU is attempting to do the right thing here, and it's always good when people try to do the right thing, but I think that nobody is ever going to get this right. Somebody is going to make a mistake somewhere, and it's going to have wider reaching implications than we could ever imagine. So it's a challenge to see, you know, what can we personally do to make sure that we are protected in the event that the thing that we currently trust and that currently does what we need is not, you know, suddenly going to be available to everybody else, so that all of our private conversations, which currently, you know, seem completely innocent, can't be used against us at some point in the future, because that, of course, is the potential problem that we are facing.
But we have to train the algorithm. How do we train the algorithm with all the data?
Slowly teaching robot cars what pedestrians look like so they can hunt us down later.
Oh, Jesus.
I give that like a 3 out on Jason's 1-10 scale. Flo, you had this really interesting topic that I wanted to get into as well, with the shift that we're seeing in the smartphone market. The smartphone continues to be the most important tech product in many people's lives, drives innovation, is really the growth engine for many, many of these big companies. But you had noticed a couple of things that I think that we all like seeing this year.
You mean folding screens?
folding phones, and 5G is going to change
the
world.
Sure.
Let's put those things aside.
Oh yeah.
What about good things in smartphones?
You know what? I really got to hand it to Apple here. Like this year when they launched the small... So first of all, they did the iPhone SE, which was the affordable iOS device. I mean, that was a big deal, because a lot of people, you know, it was like, oh, the iPhone is really freaking expensive. And so if you wanted a phone that was affordable, relatively, you would have to look to an Android manufacturer. But Apple was like, no. And this was the good year to do that too, because, unfortunately, with the pandemic and everything else that we've been hit with, we've also been hit with the economic... Those of us plebeians down on earth have been hit with some economic downfalls. I mean, we don't really have the kind of cash to throw around that maybe we had even a year ago, just because of the way that things slowed down this year. But even though things slowed down for us, they didn't slow down for all the, you know, the big companies. Samsung still went through with all of its massive smartphone launches, but there's rumors, and I think we're gonna see the fruits of this in actually just a few weeks, after the digital CES. It's supposed to be happening in 2021. They are consolidating some of their models to not have like all these big, you know, we don't have like a whole Note lineup. We're just gonna kind of give you these different tiers of flagship, you know, high-end devices, and you sort of decide where you want to start. And of course, on top of that, it's, you know, as I said, folding phones. I never thought that I would see so many folding phones stylized in an Instagram reel. And yet this was the year for the folding phone. It kind of made me want one, actually. Just so I could stylize it. Just so I can do a nice flat lay.
Yeah. I know Austin Evans and Mike Hurley, they're into it.
I'm so jealous of Mike's folding Samsung device.
Jason, you have spent some time with all of the iPhones. Do you have any thoughts about like the 12 mini and maybe ways that Apple could continue to push in this direction in the future?
Well, I think the overall story is that, you know, Apple started off with a one size fits all approach to phones, and that worked really well for a while, and it allowed Samsung to discover the uncharted territory that was big phones. And, you know, Apple started making bigger phones and they were immediately rewarded for that. They had their best like iPhone quarter and year kind of ever when they released the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus. But this latest, they've been tinkering, and, you know, they did the XR, which became the iPhone 11, and that was a bigger but cheaper phone. And this year, I think they finally have completely embraced the idea that the iPhone needs to be a product line. And, you know, it's all same versions, like what Flo said about Samsung, like it's all different versions of the same story, which is the smartphone market is so large that you can't make one or two products that serve it. But at the same time, it's evolved to the point where maybe something like a Galaxy Note doesn't need to exist because that's just a big phone. Like it's not a special edition device that is above phones. It's like literally, no, it's just the big one of our phones. And Apple similarly is sort of, they've got four flagship models essentially. And then a couple others that they're still selling, and they go from the mini all the way up to the Pro Max, and it's literally the smallest phone that they've made in 6 years, essentially, and the largest phone they've ever made. And I think, you know, we've heard that the iPhone 12 mini sales aren't spectacular. They're okay, but I would imagine that that is a product that is going to sell pretty decently over time to a lot of people who are not buying a phone every year but do want the smaller phone. And, you know, I think it's one of those cases where the truth is it's probably an edge case, and most people are going to like a more mainstream sized model than the larger or the smaller. But when the market is this big, and when you're seeking out, you know, and you're motivated as a company to seek out new ways to sell products to people in order to keep your sales going, you start looking in the corners. And as somebody who likes the smaller phone, and I think this iPhone 12 mini is spectacularly good because it is a complete iPhone 12, just small, I'm glad that it exists, even though, you know, it's never going to be the runaway hit like a mid-range iPhone is going to be.
Yes, but sorry, down the line, it's going to keep the users around. I know a couple people who actually switched to the smaller iPhones after that came out. They were elated that that happened because they just wanted a smaller phone. And I feel like at least offering that keeps people around longer.
Sure. And potentially gets an upgrade that they might not otherwise get.
Exactly.
I know a lot of people who, I think Apple was waiting them out, and they didn't ever break, right? Like they're like, no, I'm not. Mm-hmm. I'll just get. And then when they do the SE, but it's based on the iPhone 6 instead of the iPhone 5, a lot of the people I knew who were iPhone SE holdouts looked at that and said, no, I don't want that. That's not what I want. And the iPhone 12 mini is literally what they've been waiting for. And I think this goes across the phone market too. Like a lot of the race to the larger phones left a lot of people who don't want a larger phone in the dust, and they're not the majority, but they're definitely a significant minority. And I think it's smart of any phone maker to look at places that are underserved in the market. It's such a lucrative market that look at any place that's underserved and try to get a model in that space, because you will appeal to somebody. And I think the experiments with the folding phones are all about that too, right? It's like nobody really knows the right one that's going to hit it off and appeal to everybody, but you might as well start experimenting now, because I really believe that one of the great lessons of the smartphone market historically is Samsung making all those different size phones and discovering what we now know, which is big phones are good and people like them, but folding phones, we don't know that yet. So I love that everybody's trying all of this different stuff, because somebody's going to hit on something and we're all going to look at it and say, oh, that's what a folding phone should be. And I don't know if we've gotten there yet, but it'll happen.
To have massive R&D budgets.
Yeah. Or a willing, I mean, and presumably Apple's doing this internally and they don't release those products. But the other way to go is to do your market research by just releasing products and seeing what happens. And, you know.
Looking at you, Samsung.
Yep.
I have to say, I find it really interesting seeing the number of people who I know, you know, from school and things like that, who have recently got the 12 mini, because they, you know, don't necessarily want to have a humongous phone in their pockets, but they do want, you know, the nice cameras and everything, more cameras than are provided by the SE. But at the same time, I would say probably the same number of people have bought a mini bought an SE. And the thing is something like the mini is not necessarily going to appeal to the instant upgraders, the people that will buy the new phone as soon as it's out. They're the kind of people who will pick up a phone next August or September, knowing the new iPhone is coming out in October, or not knowing the new iPhone is coming out in October, because they're oblivious to things like that. And it's just the phone that they want, and they see it and it's pretty and it comes in a couple of colors. So they grab one and they're happy. And, you know, that, you know, for those people who want that device, is great. I did consider the mini. I seriously considered the mini, but I went Max because apparently I'm just somewhat slightly insane. Because why would I go from mini to Max when I could have stopped in the middle? But hey,
you know, the bigger screen is good for watching video in bed, I have to say.
I mean, I also have an iPad mini, which is not.
Oh, see, we don't have tablets anymore, really, in the Android world, unless you just want something low end. So I just have to get a phone that does it all, really.
Get you a phone that can do both.
Yeah, I do tend to find I don't really take my, you know, an iPad with me everywhere, especially right now because, you know, pandemic. But at the same time, if I need to get into the grocery store and there's a queue and I want to watch something, my phone has got plenty big enough a screen, and I've always got AirPods with me. So
the world we live in. Bless.
Well, let's maybe wind this up talking about what I put in the Google Doc as work/play/school from home. So we touched on this earlier, where a lot of people were suddenly finding themselves working from home and or having kids doing school virtually. That's true for my family for sure. And I think for a lot of people, this is sort of the first time where a lot of this technology, things like even things like video conferencing, have really come into the home in a big way. And I'm curious what y'all have seen there, and if there are things that you think that we have all learned about this technology and how we used it in 2020 that we may carry forward into a hopefully post-COVID world. What about you, Rosemary?
Well, I have seen that it turns out a lot of companies are not very good at pivoting quickly. So I've seen a lot of people who've literally had to rent cars to drive their stuff home from the office, because the office only had desktops and monitors and keyboards and so on for people. And they had never anticipated that maybe more of their stuff would need a laptop. And, you know, we did hear about, you know, lockdowns and stuff happening in China before it happened elsewhere in the world. So I don't think it should have been as big a surprise as it was. But a lot of companies just do not have any infrastructure to handle people working from home. But the good news is a lot of companies who were previously completely against working from home, and there's no way you can be effective working from home, that's, you know, that's not going to happen, are actually discovering that, guess what, their staff are pretty good at working from home, and that a lot of people would like a lot more flexibility in that regard. And they're probably going to get it. In some cases, you know, they'll still need to get people back into the office. I know some engineers who, you know, have still had had to make trips into the office to, you know, check out the machining of products and stuff like that. And I know other people have had to go into, you know, physically move servers around and stuff like that. But a lot of us can work from home and we're doing pretty well at it. Obviously, some people do miss the social aspect of it, and that's completely understandable. But technically speaking, I'm seeing a lot more people realizing that actually owning a monitor and things like that is not necessarily a bad thing if you've got a little bit of space for a table that's big enough, and it makes your life much easier.
Jason, you and I have worked from home about the same amount of time, five, six Yep. years or so. And I know for me, I didn't really feel a big difference, see a big difference in my day-to-day work life through this. But you do have student-aged kids. What was that like for them, if you're willing to share?
Yeah, it was interesting. You know, this for those of us who have been involved with remote work for the last a little while, I think it's sort of, we have a little survivor's guilt, I think, of like, oh, my life didn't actually change that much. But we also have a history of the ups and downs of this tech because we've known about it for a long time and everybody else is figuring it out. And so I have done a lot with both my kids of sort of the, that's right. That is a problem when you're remote, like seeing them realize it. I would say for school, it's really funny because everybody is different. Every kid is going to be different and learn differently. What I found is that with my kids, the online nature of school is focusing in a way where there just are fewer distractions. The problem is that there's also no or very little social interaction. You don't have your friends around. And all of us can picture, like, imagine if you went to school and, like, when you went to school. And then imagine that you're walking through the halls of your high school or whatever, or your college, and there's nobody there but you. That's kind of what it's like. Like, you could still get an education. You go into the room and a teacher is there and they'll teach you things. But think about how empty the rest of it feels. That's kind of what has been happening, at least for my kids who are older. I have a high school kid and a college student. And that's the hard part, I think, is, you know, the schools have set up these structures to get education done remotely. And different kids are going to react differently to that. And there are different ways to learn. And the truth is that this is going to work for some people and not for others. For my daughter, she got far better grades her last couple of quarters of her freshman year in college than she did her first. And I think it's because she no longer had social interactions and instead had nothing to do but focus on school, which is great and also terrible because it's going to college is supposed to be both of those things. And for my son, you know, he has some friends that he does like gaming with and stuff, but it has pulled the plug on a lot of his more casual interactions that I think are super important in making new friends and all of that. So I think the technology, at least in our experience, has been okay for education. The problem is all the other things you miss out on. And, you know, I know I decry that a little bit when people who run businesses say, oh, well, everybody has to be in the office because you never know, you're going to have that chat with somebody and it's going to be serendipity and it leads to a magical thing. And I'm a real believer that you can have a dispersed workforce and it can be good. But those are adults who have families, presumably, and lives and people who they're friends with in their community. And then they also have their job. Whereas for kids, especially kids, you know, teenagers, their social interaction and school is all wrapped up in a bundle. And I think it's harder, basically impossible to replicate that. So I think our kids are going to end up decently educated, not maybe as well as they would have been, but behind socially. And that's going to be something that they and their classmates are all going to have to grapple with the next few years.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm just sitting here nodding to everything Jason was saying.
Well, 2020, what a year.
What a year.
Let's not do it again.
Nope.
How about that? Well, I'd like everyone to go around and maybe we got time for a closing statement on the year. So is there anything that we didn't touch on, or if you just want to tell 2020 to, you know, go die in a fire, now's your chance. What about you, Flo?
All right. This might be kind of big and weighty, and I apologize. But God, I would just love to see a little more publicization. I can't even think of the word. everything is so privatized. And I felt like 2020 really brought the spotlight on that. I just would love to see people take back our tech, our schools, just whatever we can. I don't know. I'm just hoping that we took the time, those of us who made it through this year. I am taking notes of sort of what I've had to stare at in the mirror, what didn't go right in my work from home life, what didn't go right in my new sort of parenting life, because I had a kid this year and that sort of changed a lot of norms for me. So maybe I'm blindly optimistic going into 2021, but I feel like I've just done so much internal work because that's all I have been able to do this last year. I'm just really hoping for a little more sunny skies coming through. So that's where I'm at right now.
Hey, it's okay to bring heavy stuff. This is for us. There's no one listening. Just the four of us. There are people listening. Jason, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, tough year all around, as everybody said. What can you say? 0 out of 10. I think, you know, I'm hopeful for the new year. All our problems are not going to go away. And so I don't want people to sort of like get, I think all of us are going to get into 2021 and it's going to be a little bit of a letdown because, you know, believe it or not, the passage of Earth through that particular part of its orbit doesn't like break through a barrier and then everything's good again.
What?
It's going to be a little bit, but you know, I think my the story of 2020, I think, is I want us to have learned things having gone through this and for that to be something that we take into 2021. So I guess my final statement about 2020 is I hope that we learn from being isolated, but from using technology to connect people. I hope that we learn the right lessons from that, and that in 2021, we emerge into a world where people are more aware of what technology can do to bring people together when they're at a distance, and that there's more support for especially virtual organizations or work groups where people don't have to move across the country and live somewhere super expensive in order to do a job they would do just as well in their home where they want to stay. You know, we've seen a lot of tech companies sort of pay lip service to that. I am looking forward to seeing in 2021 whether some of these tech companies really embrace that or whether they backtrack and start to say, you know, my favorite example is Apple says, well, you're writing articles that show up in the App Store, and it's entirely just words being put into a CMS, but you have to move to Cupertino and work there 5 days a week to do it. Doesn't make any sense. You're losing good people. I think a lot of companies in general, not just tech companies, had that as their policy in the past. What will happen in 2021? I hope they learn from it a little bit, because I really believe that using these tools, you can run a great business and have a good team, and you don't all have to be sitting in the same space. It's not that you can't, but you don't have to be, and that you end up being able to hire better people because they won't move. And so you have to go to them. And I think that that could be good. That's the thing I'm looking forward to a little bit, hopefully, but also warily for 2021, is did we learn these lessons?
All right, Rosemary, take us home.
Well, I think one of the things that we have all learned this year, whether it's for better or for worse, is flexibility and resilience, because all of us have had an interesting year, be that, you know, simply that we couldn't really see friends and family in the ways that we're used to, or that, you know, our entire lives have been turned upside down. But the good news is we're all here now, and we've all made it this far, which means we're going to make it to the end. And, you know, we already know that 2021 has got some good things in store for us, you know, so that's a great start, and things can only get better from there. And so I think we have learned, you know, to get us this far. I'm hoping, as Jason said, that, you know, a lot of companies are going to learn from this and offer their workers the flexibility that some of them desperately want and need, but also be there to support the workers who do need to get back into the office for their personal, you know, mental health and so on.
Yeah.
Because there are some people who are not enjoying working from home, and I feel terribly for them. I'm very fortunate in that overall I'm enjoying it. It has been a bit of a shock to the system, and I will you know, and I will absolutely admit that there have been days where I did not get out of my pajamas and I barely left one single room because I just wasn't feeling up to it. But the good news is we made it here now. If we're in the Northern Hemisphere, days are officially getting longer again. And my grandmother actually got a vaccine the other day, the first one. So
amazing.
I am feeling super optimistic about next year. Because, my other grandmother is scheduled in for one next week, I believe. So, I think overall things are going to get there. We just have to give it a while longer and continue to do the good things that we know that we need to do to help the world get where it needs to go.
All right. Well, Relay FM members, thank you for just an amazing year. I mean, sitting here listening to the three of y'all kind of sum up 2020, what came to mind for me is just how amazing our community has been this year, you know, not only through things like membership and the Discord and getting to know so many people so much better, but things like a record-breaking podcast-a-thon and all the other things Relay has gotten to do this year. None of that would be possible without the listeners, people who have stuck with us throughout a wild year. And I know, like everybody else, you know, the times where I would sneak in podcast listening were taken away, so I had to find new time. So thank you all so much. It has been a hard year for everybody, but I like how we're leaving it on this episode with a note of hope and looking forward to seeing what 2021 may bring. This has been an episode of Fusion. If you are a Relay FM member and you're not fully utilizing all your perks, there's a whole bunch of them. You can review those on the website relay.fm/membership. If you have any questions about your membership, you can always email us. That's membership@relay.fm. Go check out the shows, all the links and people's Twitter accounts, everything are in the show notes. These are three fine human beings that you should get to know better. That's what I say. And we will be back in January with another episode of Fusion. Have a happy new year and stay safe.